You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the latest edition of this William Hill Golf Podcast. Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall here and with you this week. We're going to look forward to the Omega Dubai Desert Classic and the Farmers Insurance Open as well. Good afternoon, Mr. Tindall.
Hello, Dave.
How are you? Are you well?
I'm very well. And are you okay after seeing Austin Cook not win when the leader after 54 holes?
I wasn't even going to mention it, Dave. I'm crestfallen.
Oh, yeah?
Because you expect...
Roll with a punch.
Yeah, you do. You expect... He was trading around about 3-1, I think, going into Sunday night. And you expect a place in that position, I think. You think, maybe he's not going to win, but shoot one or two or three under par on an easy golf course, and he should manage to hit the frame and there's a nice return for the week. But when, after nine holes, he's not only out of contention in terms of winning the tournament, but has very little opportunity to place, you've got every right, I think, to curse.
Yeah, do you do that thing where you look at his score for the day, plus three, and you go down the leaderboard, and you think, there's no one worse than him. It's like as if he knew my money was on him, and he's the worst out of the top 50 in the field. How have I pick this guy who's doing this to me?
It was like that. The golfing gods were against me on Sunday night, unfortunately. But we saw two seriously high-profile, highly talented golfers win either side of the pond, with Tommy Fleetwood producing what was a stunning back nine in Abu Dhabi. Dhabi?
I said Dhabi, you said Derby.
You're right, and I was wrong, and it just seems, it doesn't trip off my tongue, right? Abu Dhabi. But he produced one of those back nines that dreams are made of, shooting 30 on the back to defend his title in the UAE. And John Rahm won again on the PGA Tour. Two elite ball strikers producing yet again, Dave.
Yeah, it's a funny little thing. At the end of last year, I got in contact with the people who do the official world golf rankings and asked them to give me like a table of the players who'd gain the most points, net gain points. And first on that list was Rahm, and third was Fleetwood. So, you know, last year they were the two biggest improvers. Does make sense, doesn't it, that first events...
Who was second on the list?
I can't remember. I should have noticed.
I've thrown that one at you there.
I'll dig out a top 10 at some point. And the fact that here we are early in 2018, it, you know, our cards were marked really, and it's sort of continuation. Sometimes we think because, you know, people have eaten Christmas dinner and it's a new year that something changed, but not really. If they'd done this sort of from March to May gap, you wouldn't think anything, because the year changes. Somehow you think, oh, everyone's reset themselves, but it was just a continuation, wasn't it?
It was. They were both superb, particularly Fleetwood. In that wind on Sunday, I thought that was an immaculate, stunning performance from Fleetwood. And this isn't just a purple patch for him now, is it? Has he gone... He's into the top 10 in the world rankings. John Rahm, by the way, moved to number 2 in those rankings with that win, which is astonishing, given that 24 months ago no one had heard of John Rahm, or very few had. But Fleetwood's into that top 10 now as well.
Yeah. By the way, I think I've thought of the second person. It's pretty obvious. I think it's Justin Thomas.
Right, oh yeah, it must be.
Yeah.
You'd think.
Yeah, but yeah, absolutely right. And Fleetwood... It's probably what Rory was dreaming of doing, wasn't it? Going through the gears on the Sunday, but Rory sort of didn't have the gears. Maybe that was no surprise, but Fleetwood just did. Maybe just boosted by being Europeans number one and being the defending champion, he just sort of knew. But I watched him quite closely all week. The amount of putts he just missed, he could have shot about 10, 12 shots better. Mm. He's right on the lip on so many of them in the first 3 days anyway.
I wonder how he's going to get on this week, because he is in the field for the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. William Hill have Rory McIlroy as the 9-2 favourite. Sergio Garcia is 8-1. Henrik Stenson 11-1. Tommy Fleetwood 11-1. Matthew Fitzpatrick 16-1. Brandon Grace and Tyrrell Hatton are both 22s. and it's 28-1 and bigger the rest. And the tour remains in the United Arab Emirates after last week's event, for this week's event in Dubai. And plenty that contended last week in Abu Dhabi, they are back in the firing line this week, aren't they? And as you would expect, it's a very similar setup as well. Yeah. This course, the Majlis course, has hosted the event since its inception, barring those renewals in 99 and 2000. So there's a good bank of course form for punters to analyse here. We also have a number of repeat winners at this track, with Ernie Els taking the title three times. Tiger Woods has won it twice. Stephen Gallagher won it twice. And most recently, the man that's at the top of the betting, Rory McIlroy, took the title for a second time in 2015. And coincidentally, the last two winners, Danny Willett and Sergio Garcia, went on to win the Masters.
Or was it coincidentally?
Oh, I think it was coincidentally, but, probably, but maybe not.
It's just it was an early season win, wasn't it? I think that was one of the keys. They've got an early season win, so they sort of head to Augusta with that in their mind.
Yeah, I don't think it matters that it's this track.
The
really.
Only thing I'd say, it's quite kind of... A lot of links players play well here, and bizarrely, a lot of links players play well at Augusta. You think, like, Seve only ever won at the Open or the Masters. Same with Faldo. There's some links there. Excuse the pun, but there's some sort of correlation between the two. So it's sort of, it is an angle in, I think, maybe.
As far as this course is concerned, the wind and the water are the only defence for this golf course, and the latter only comes into play if the former is a factor. So if the wind doesn't blow, it's easy for these golfers. And scoring conditions look like they're going to be perfect for these players. And I think we can expect a similar winning total to last week.
Yeah, and I think the schedule change is quite important, because it used to be you had Abu Dhabi, then you had Qatar, and then you had this. And a lot of them would maybe miss Qatar because it's a windier track. The grass, the Bermuda's a bit kind of thicker.
It's lower profile, isn't it?
Lower profile. So the fact that these 2 weeks come back to back in the United Arab Emirates, I think there's every reason, I think, to think that anyone who played well last week will do this week.
I agree.
There's nothing to sort of make them change golf style or anything. They just bang on it again. Even the weather forecast suggests good weather for the first 3 days and a bit more of a test on Sunday. So it's almost a kind of rerun in many ways.
I went round in circles with this event, looking at it continually for what seemed like hours on end. And I haven't gone at a bet in the event. I found it incredibly difficult. I think Henrik Stenson was the closest I came, given his exceptional record at this tournament and the way he finished last week.
Yeah.
I thought 11-1 was kind of fair, but not enough to tempt me into having a bet.
Yeah, I understand that. I think sometimes when you're going round in circles, just say no, because
there's another event to bet on, isn't there?
There's another event. There's always next week. There's another one in America. There's always something else. You don't have to. And it's just, I'm quite a big fan of that idea about your first thought is your best thought.
Yes.
Quite a popular thing, isn't it? Have you ever read that Malcolm Gladwell book about thin slicing?
No, I've read Outliers, that one, but not the other Gladwell.
Well, one of the things Gladwell is, don't belittle your first thought often, because what's going on in your head, even though you think it, people might say, oh, I've got a gut feeling. It's not a gut feeling, is it? It's come from something that's processed.
Yeah.
And if you see something quick, I've often found that if I see something quick, that's the what. I remember at last year's Open, I absolutely went straight to Matt Kuchar without any sort of noise or blurring, and you know, it went very close, and I was really on that bet. Sometimes it doesn't work that way, but I often think if you go in, you're just slogging through it and you think, I can't quite see, then it's not going to happen.
Have you got a bet for this event?
Yes.
Good. I'm glad, because that means we've got a podcast bet for this.
No, I did see it fairly quick. There's no rocket science to this. It's Ross Fisher at 28-1.
Yes.
Just playing on the idea, if you played well last week, I think you're going to play well this week. I mean,
there's a section in that Gladwell book, by the way, Outliers, about choking, isn't there?
Right.
Would you say Fisher would ever fall into that like fight or flight category?
Well, what's he got to do? Is it last, seven events? Last six events, he's shot 20 under or better three times.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's not won any of them. Finished runner-up in all three. So he must be thinking, it's that thing, isn't it? You can play as well as you want, but if someone else plays better, what do you do? There's nothing. It's like trying to win your first major. Lee Westwood will probably think he's played well enough to win a couple. If someone else just plays out of the skin, what do you do? Mm. It's not like tennis, is it? You can't control how someone else plays.
I think sometimes it's different, isn't it? Because Monty had all those chances.
Yeah.
Where he threw a few away, didn't he?
Yeah, he threw away
major championship. The one at Winged Foot
yes, was the
big one. Yeah. Where he could maybe have played better. Or he could have played up to his level in a few of those major championships, but there was and snatched one or two.
There was an early one at Pebble Beach where I think Jack Nicklaus actually shook his hand, I think it was 92, and said, well done, you've won. No, because the weather was horrible. There's no way anyone's catching that. And I think Tom Kite came through and won, played out of his skin. So,
yeah.
You know, Ross Fisher, he's played well enough to get at least one win, you'd say, wouldn't you? If you're shooting 21 under and 20 under twice...
Yeah, it's not like he's not won before either.
Yeah, exactly. Although it's been a while, 2014.
Is that his last win now?
But he must be thinking... The thing I like, though, was when he shot 20 under at the Alfred Dunhill, then he went out the very next week in the Italian Open and shot 21 under and came second again. He didn't think, oh, I'm so unlucky.
Yeah.
So the fact that he's put together these two really, really low scores in back-to-back weeks only in October, I think he can do it again. Because, again, I'm saying we're not suddenly moving... to some, you know, inland pitch and putt easy course or some totally different sort of test. It's a very similar thing. So 28 to 1, sometimes you have to train yourself to think, well, I'm used to seeing Fisher at 40s, but I think 28 to 1 on his form. I mean, three top twos in his last six, 17th in the DP World Tour Championship, also in Dubai, of course, and lots of good course form. It is a little bit old, most of it, but the first five times he played here, top 15, all five.
Yeah.
And then more recently, 26th, 2016, tied 20th, 2015. So he's got a few recent good knocks, but just in his current form, I thought 28 to 1 is an each-way price.
That's the key, isn't it? Each-way price, because you're happy if he grabs a place at that sort of price.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Who else do you want to mention then?
Definitely Stenson, yeah.
Yeah.
But just 11s is just a bit...
So, yeah, given that the head of the betting's so strong, you can easily see McIlroy, who's a two-time winner and played pretty well last week on his return to action, winning. Sergio Garcia won in Singapore.
Last week, by five shots.
He's defending champion.
Yeah.
He's 8-1. There's no reason why Garcia shouldn't play well again, is there?
No, not at all.
Apart from maybe the... I don't think it's extra pressure... of defending. I think it's everything that comes with defending, the time that you need to dedicate to off-course activities.
He's probably seen Fleetwood do it last week and thought, well, maybe he can, why can't I? Matt Fitzpatrick played, putted like a demon, didn't he, last week? There's no reason why he shouldn't play really well. So it is a tough front end, isn't it, you have to say.
It's one of those things with Matthew Fitzpatrick, though, where you know the golf course maybe doesn't suit him as well as it does suit some of the other players, and he's just getting through these tests on pure ability. He's an unbelievable competitor, isn't he, Fitzpatrick?
Yeah. Plus, obviously, the putting stroke will cure a lot of evils, won't it? So
yeah.
He just keeps... I mean, he went out in 29, didn't he, in round three. Thought he was going to shoot something stupid. But he was 40-1, though, wasn't he, last week? So it's, if you're a fan of his, you've got to take a big step down to 16s.
Yeah, that tempers the enthusiasm, doesn't it, to a certain extent.
Alexander Levy could
go well. I was just about to mention him, 50-1.
I think he's going to be, he's popular this week, isn't he? I've seen on Twitter people like him. Again, he played great. It suits him, this kind of attacking, fire-at-the-flags type of golf. And, of course, he's got that Ryder Cup in France to kind of, you know, spur him on.
It's a motivating factor,
absolutely,
isn't it, for the French players this season.
And Stephen Gallagher, I mean, you could easily say 66-1. It's ridiculous, isn't it, his record? You said those back-to-back wins. He was also second the year before that run, third the year after, and top 10, I think, last year again. He holidays here with his family, so he just keeps going back and... you know, whatever formula he uses, it just repeats, doesn't it? And he shot a couple around in the 60s last week, so he could easily run into a place.
The only other one I want to mention before we move on is Jorge Campillo, who played very well last week, played well the week before as well. He's in good form at the moment. Spaniards have a great record in this event. He's 125-1, which might look a little on the shade on the large side come the end of the week.
Yeah.
Should we move on?
Yes.
Let's get stuck into the Farmers Insurance Open, which sees John Rahm as the defending champion winner last week at 7-1. Head of the betting here with William Hill. Ricky Fowler is 12-1. Hideki Matsuyama, 16-1. Justin Rose is 16-1. Tiger Woods is 20-1. Jason Day, 22-1. Mark Leishman, 22-1. And it's 33-1 and bigger the rest. And this is about as good as it gets, with Tiger Woods returning for his first full field PGA Tour event since this event last year, where he missed the cut, followed that by withdrawing in the Dubai Desert Classic. But he showed at the back end of last year he was ready for a return to competitive golf with his tie for ninth in the Hero World Challenge. But this is a different test entirely. On a beast of a golf course in very different conditions. He's been put in at 20-1 for an event that he's won 8 times in his career.
Seven
times in his career.
And the US Open there.
And the US Open there, of course.
Just to stop any pedantic people
picking me up on that.
Like me.
Are you surprised at his position in the market with only 4 players ahead of him in the betting? Or is that what you expected?
It's in the real world, I'm not surprised, because we are bookmakers, William Hill, and we know, don't they, that people want to back Tiger Woods, so you don't need to dangle fancy prices. If you were talking about his true price, I'd have him nearer 40s, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think I was expecting 33-35-1 on Tiger Woods this week. Seeing only 4 players above him in the betting makes me think he's an artificially short price, despite his incredible record at the event.
Yeah, because there's a lot of love for Tiger, and people who maybe a bit half-hearted about betting on golf, to see his name and go, oh, Tiger Woods, and they probably got wind that he had this really good comeback. Although, for all it was really good, he was ninth in a field of, 18?
Yeah.
So it's got to temper a little bit. I'm not interested at that price.
And is this the perfect course for Tiger Woods anymore? It's very different conditions, cold mornings. He's had back problems in his career. He's going to have to drive the ball pretty well this week to win. We saw him showcase a slightly different swing in the Hero World Challenge, and he drove the ball pretty well.
Yeah.
But it's different on this golf course.
Yeah. Firstly, it's obviously 2 courses they play this week, and there's the North course, which is the easier one. But I think if he'd played last week, maybe the Career Builder, which was a much easier set of courses, that might have been a nice, gentle sort of easy way in. But to come straight back out here on the South course, 3 rounds on the South course, it's asking a lot. I know world-renowned golf betting expert Pete Farris wanted to back Tiger to miss the cut, and we do have that price at 6-4.
Yeah, we do. We've got a few Tiger Woods specials on the William Hill website. To make the cut is 1-2, to miss it is 6-4, top 5 4-1, top 10 2-1, top 20 11-10, and then you've got your slightly more fantastical markets available there. Tiger to win by 3 or more than 3 shots, 33s, more than 4 shots, 80-1. So a full range of markets, Tiger Woods specials on the website and on the app. Let's talk a bit about the golf course. Torrey Pines South, which the players will, as you've referenced, play 3 rounds on, it's a long golf course, 7,700 yards. Even with the golf ball going further than ever before, it's still a test. Some really huge par 4s on the layout. And in addition to the length, the fairways are tough to find. I really consider length off the tee a huge advantage at this event. Brant Snedeker's almost the exception to the rule, isn't he? The way he's played this golf course in the past. I think if you're backing an average to short hitter this week, you better have a very solid reason.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I've got two picks and both are hitting it a mile at the minute.
Yeah, me too. The North Course, shorter and easier. There's only one round there. And it's worth noting that this course was extended following a renovation in 2016. And it played tougher last year as a consequence. Bent grass greens were introduced on the North Course as well. And the players were very positive when assessing the quality of the putting surfaces on the North last year. We will see if they remain, if they're rolling as smoothly this year, because that Poana tends to get bumpy. And it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because you can hit good putts on these greens and they can miss. That's led me to backing a guy that's a bad putter. It sort of evens the playing field, doesn't it, a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, was it three of the last 4 years or four of the last five, the winning score single digits under par. So it's not a putting contest, is it? It's ball striking. And then, you know, clearly you do need to hole some putts, but it's not going to be down to just setting up a million chances like last week probably was.
Yeah, I'm looking at total driving and strokes gained off the tee, to be honest. I think those are key stats this week if you're looking for the winner of the Farmers. I've got a couple of picks.
Me too, yeah.
Do you want to lead off?
You go first, because I did the Ross Fisher one.
Okay, I'm going Gary Woodland.
Yeah, that makes lots of sense.
40-1.
High on my list.
Yeah, I put him up for this event in the past, and I'm hopeful this is going to be his year finally. He's spoken in the past about his love for the golf course as well, Torrey Pines South in particular. And I think that's given that a number of the holes move from left to right, and he's a power fader, Woodland. And that's been evident how much he likes this golf course with his finishing positions. They don't tell the full tale either. He's had the 36-hole lead a couple of years ago before capitulating in those brutal conditions that Sunday that Snedeker
posted that
number. Yeah, I think he might have been, yeah. And he held the 54-hole lead as well in 2014 before faltering on Sunday and finishing 10th. And he comes into this on the back of that solid finish in Hawaii in the Sony Open on a course that I don't think suits him nearly as well as this one does. He closed with a 64, finished 7th there, and I think importantly with Woodland, he putted very well in Hawaii. And that's often been his Achilles heel in the past. And he talked at the end of last year, coming into this year, about how confident he was. He had a heart-to-heart with Butch Harmon, his coach, about getting more out of his athletic ability. He's had short game lessons with Pete Cowan. That was during the Shark Shootout. And he's got putting advice from Brad Faxon. So he's going to all the right people to try and work things out. And he actually said January the 1st couldn't get here quick enough. He's ready to turn that corner. Talked about how emotional it had been last year with the loss of one of his twins and having his having the birth of his first child. So I think this is a big season for Woodland. It's about time he realised all that potential. I've said that on this podcast before as well. And I'm hopeful he can find something a little bit extra this week and at least grab a place at 40-1.
Yep.
So he's my first pick.
It's really good. I shall go nearer the front end of the leaderboard and go 16-1 Justin Rose.
Okay.
Before the end of last year, he was on fire, wasn't he? Probably the hottest player on the planet. Had closed 2017 with 3 wins in 5 starts. HSBC Champions, a World Golf Championship event, the Turkish Airlines Open, another big European field, Indonesian Masters, not so good, but you look back, he had 9 top 10s to finish 2017 with. I mean, that's fantastic golf. Now, I read some, and I think a lot of people liked him for Abu Dhabi because I thought, well, it'll just continue. But I did read some quotes where he said he basically didn't touch a club over Christmas. I think because he had played deep into 2017, he needed a break. So he put the clubs away, literally didn't do anything. And then he came out in Abu Dhabi, and I heard a few people say they've never seen him quite so animated. So I think he thought, hey, where's the magic gone? I don't understand. So over the first two rounds, it just wasn't there for him. He shot 71 both days and just wasn't getting anywhere. But weekend, 67-69. So I think on that weekend, I think he was just starting to blow away those cobwebs. So I see no reason why he can't jump back to that brilliant end of season. Whereas another comment I heard last week was, how far he's hitting it these days. Mm. He's sort of changed his swing to sort of protect his back, and he's just launching it a mile. I mean, we knew he was a biggish hitter, but I think people are genuinely surprised how far he's thumping it at the minute. So obviously that's going to be really good on this course. Didn't used to have a very good record here, but last year was fourth. Was the halfway leader. Opened with a 65. I think that must have been on the north course.
It was on the north, yeah.
But then was solid.
That was actually the low round of the week on the north course.
Right. So hopefully could cash in there again. But he was solid the other 3 days on the south. Last week hit 81% of greens.
Which
is really good. So it was just, I think that would have just sharpened him up. So 16-1. You look at his record in California as well. He's got four top six finishes in his last seven starts there. So he does play well. And also on the Pauana, I always struggle down with
Pauana.
Pauana. I don't know why. I think it's all the letters in it. It's like a sort of hand you pick out when you're playing Scrabble. And you think, what am I going to play with that a lot? I don't get anything. Josh Culp's Future of Fantasy website, which is really good for looking at kind of performance on various criteria. It's got a list of best performers on Pauana greens since 2013-14. There we are in sixth place, Justin Rose. And you don't immediately think of him as a great putter, do you? But on Pauana, he's gaining 2.75 strokes.
I think that's because it helps bad putters.
Could well be, like you said, yeah.
Yeah, I think it just does level things out a little bit. I'm not saying, listen, you can't win all these events that Justin Rose has won by being a terrible putter each and every week, but I do think it does level the playing field a little bit.
So all in all, I think had he come straight from Indonesia to this event, I think he would have been the second favourite behind Rahm at about 10. So he's gone out to 16s.
You think that's a decent price?
Just on the back of a kind of shake rust off type of event. So I think that's fine.
I'm going with Lucas Glover as my...
They talk about bad putters.
Yeah, there you go. 80-1 Lucas Glover. I've had him in mind for this event for a while. He's striking it really well at the moment, Lucas Glover. Played solidly at the Career Builder last week, and looking back through his record at Torrey, he's finished 4th, 3rd and 9th in the last decade. I put an emphasis, as mentioned, on total driving on this course, and he was 4th in that category last year on tour, ranked a respectable 17th in strokes gained off the tee as well. If his iron play is as sharp as it was last week, it's just whether or not he can hole a few. If you back him, expect him to miss more than his fair share of four-footers, and don't get too angry if you can possibly. But I think his long game matters more at Torrey Pines, so I'm going 80-1 Lucas Glover as my second and final selection.
Yeah, I think these are the type of events you want to back him in. He's a US Open winner, isn't he?
Yeah.
So you're not backing him to shoot 25 under. So, yeah, that's good.
Who's your second pick?
I'm going with another massive hitter. He's actually second in driving distance this year, Tony Finau.
Can see him going really well.
Yeah.
He's on your Pauana list, isn't he? Quite high up, I think.
Yeah, he's, I think, 11th on the top Pauana performers. So that's a sort of nice bonus. I kind of looked on that and think, I hope Tony Finau's on it because I really liked him, and there he was. Course form is really, really good, and it's getting better. He made his debut in 2015, top 25. Following year, 18th. Last year, 4th. So clearly, it's a course that he really, really likes, and he has said that, you know, a big part of that is because he can blast it a mile. Second at the Safeway Open on his last start in California, which is nice too. And had a lot of really good, solid form at the back end of last year. A couple of sevenths in the playoffs, the BMW and the Tour Championship. Closed out with 16th in Vegas. Then he's opened 2018 with a tied 32nd, you think, in Hawaii. But final three rounds were all 67s. I thought that's just a nice run. He actually had a hole in one as well. So nice early positive vibes for Tony Finau. I think this is just a really good chance to play him. He won his only PGA Tour event in Puerto Rico in a really windy conditions by the coast. We're going to get that here. Plays really well, if you've noticed, in our Open as well. He's had two good knocks in that as well. So I think he just likes it when it's a good ball striking test. And as well, that bonus of the Pauana green. So I think 33-1. Ideally, I wish he'd won a bit more, but I think he's a guy who can...
It's the same with Woodland, in all honesty.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Woodland's not won for 4 years.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to go too short on these sort of players, but I think at these sort of prices, there's a good each way part to collect there. So, you know, you never know, hopefully.
Yep, 33-1 Tony Finau. Others I want to mention, Johnny Vegas, who's been well found in the market at 40-1
now.
I was on
him last week, yeah.
Yeah, he's going to go well, I think.
Threatened to go well, didn't he, last week? And
played decently enough. I think he had another top 15 finish and finished third here on his debut. He played a lot of junior golf. I think he played the World Juniors here. So,
I think I've said this before. There seems to be about 100 players who won the World Junior Golf title at Torrey Pines. Yeah, all have won.
He's 40-1. He finished third on his debut, didn't he?
Yes.
At Torrey Pines. So he's going to go well, but 40s is short enough. I think the same applies to Kyle Stanley as well. 40-1.
I was very close to him, but we've just ducked him. 50s, I would probably put him up, but 40s.
Yeah, he must still have nightmares about what happened on the 72nd hole that year.
Yeah, when he took an 8, needed a 7 to win.
Yeah.
And sort of a Jan van der Velde, and then he won the next
week, of
course.
Did Grant Snedeker sneak in that week and win?
Yeah, in the playoff.
So Snedeker's got an amazing record here, and two of them he definitely shouldn't have won, really.
Yeah.
And that one where
He shot 69 when the average was about 79 or something.
He did get out there a little bit earlier, didn't he, if you remember?
Even so, it was like absurd how far inside the average
it was. It was unbelievable, his performance that week. And then obviously nicked this one off Kyle Stanley.
Yeah. But Kyle Stanley's come back and played it well the last couple of years, so
I think he'll go well.
He's another one on that most ranking points last year. He jumped from something like 248th to top 50 in the world last year.
He just went through a huge slump, didn't he?
Yeah, putter was a big reason for that. I think the track back from that just affected him. He sort of knew he wasn't going to hole a putt, and it put pressure on all his other game. But his putting stats lately are good.
Someone I mentioned last week, Kevin Streelman, continues to play. I think he's playing the best golf of his career right now. Not got the win that his golf deserves recently, but I think 80-1 on Kevin Streelman's not too bad either. I mentioned him last week, and I think he'll go well this week.
Yeah, Mark Leishman, two-time runner-up on this course. We've talked highly of him in recent podcasts.
I think Leishman and Day should both be ahead of Woods in the betting.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah,
I mean, the way Leishman played at the back end of last year, and his course record's not bad, and Jason Day, he's just coming back, isn't he? And he's got a good record at Torrey Pines as well.
He kind of won it at a time when he was struggling to win, so I think he'll have good vibes there. But I mean, the one that's interesting and could easily just trot up again, John Rahm, defending champion.
I'm destined not to make any money out of John Rahm, I think.
I'm struggling at the minute to sort of, what do you do with him?
It's one of those situations where if you weren't on at 9-1, 10-1 in that field last week, would you back him at 7-1 in a stronger field this week?
I know what you're saying, but last week, as soon as I saw last week, I think he was something like 5 under after 6. I thought, well, he's won this.
Yeah.
And I kept all the way through. I'm thinking, well, he's going to just get over the line.
He's destined for the top, isn't he?
Yeah.
And I mean, clear number one, I think.
Because we've been in this position before where someone like Dustin Johnson has won and then his price drops and you think, oh, well, kind of missed it. And then he wins the next week. It's still 7-1.
Yeah.
It's not like.
I don't think it's by any means a bad price.
Tiger
because
was going
it's
off
so
at
good.
Sort of 11-8 in this event, wasn't he? I mean, he's not Tiger yet, but I mean, 1-2-1 is his last three tournaments. That's his form.
Yeah.
It's scary, isn't it? And he's
got four tournament wins in a ridiculously quick time.
Yeah.
I think it's like something like 30 odd events. I know he's the.
There was a list, wasn't there? Someone
Since Tiger, he's by far the quickest of this many tournament titles.
Yeah, so 7-1, it could look just fine. I mean, you could argue it's an each way price, and probably got every chance at the win. I prefer him than Ricky Fowler at 12s. Fowler's form here is a bit weird. Mm. It used to be okay, but it's really been poor of late. It's as if moving to Florida, he's forgotten how to play in California where he's from. I don't know. That's trying to come up with a theory.
I think this golf course just plays into John Rahm's hands because he can. There's nothing that he likes more than just hitting the driver.
Yeah,
and he can hit the driver on every hole at these two venues basically. So that's a massive positive.
Is he
for
a sort of group don't want to win?
Yeah, I think so. I think my my don't want to win this week would have to be Stenson, because I came closest to picking him at 11-1.
Oh, it's almost a don't want to win double.
Yeah, an each way double, Stenson and Round this week, perhaps. Go on, recap your selections then, Mr.
Yeah, so
Kimble.
In the Dubai Desert Classic, I'll go a point each way, Ross Fisher at 28-1.
No bet for me in that Dubai Desert Classic. And in the Farmers?
In the Farmers, I will go a point each way, Tony Finau at 33-1, and I'll go 1.5 points each way on Justin Rose at 16s.
Yeah, I'm going to play both Gary Woodland at 40-1 and Lucas Glover at 80-1, point each way on both. Thank you for your company.
Thank you, Dave.
I've enjoyed it. Hopefully you have too, listeners. Remember to follow us both on Twitter, at Dave Tindall Golf and at D Kellner, and tweet us your bets for this week or any thoughts you've got about the podcast. And check out the betting at williamhill.com. You can get us on the app as well. And this podcast available to download in the usual podcast places, including audioboom.com. Just type in William Hill, and myself and Dave will be back next week for a debrief and a look ahead to the following week's events. Thank you for your company on this edition of the Golf Podcast with William Hill, and we'll speak again in the not too distant future.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.